But nobody talks about the likely panic that's going to happen. And right. So that's where my thought went. One thought. The other thing is, I've always been interested in intelligent design also. And so I just kind of wondered if I could meld these two together. And I think I found a way to do that.
ID, the future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
Welcome to ID, the future. I'm your guest host, Jonathan Witt. And I'm very, very pleased today to have on the show one of Discovery Institute's senior fellows. He's a fellow senior fellow. I'm a senior fellow. I run Discovery Institute's Discovery Institute Press. And I've been with Discovery Institute for many years. For a while, I was behind the scenes with ID of the Future before handing it over to Andrew, who's doing a fantastic job. But today, I want to have on the show Jeffrey Simmons. He is a medical doctor, a novelist in a different lifetime, but now again in this lifetime. And he's got many hats he wears. We'll be talking about those here in a minute. But the occasion is a new disaster thriller novel coming out from Discovery Institute Press by Jeff Simmons. And we're going to be here to have him here to talk about it. And there it is. There's Jeff. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you.
Yes. The novel does, for our ID the Future listeners, you may be wondering, it does have a intelligent design subplot. We'll be talking about that more here in a little bit. But first, thanks for joining us, Jeff. And I'm very excited about this novel. As I said, you have written novels in the past. Here's one from years ago called The Z Papers. This thing by Jeff, it sold something like 350,000 copies. So we're not asking Jeff, hey, Jeff, you never written a novel. You're a doctor. Why don't you just pretend you're a novelist? No, that's not the case. He's successful novelist, had several good novels. Here's some things that were said about some of his earlier work. Fresh, original, and wholly authentic. That was the New York Times best-selling novelist Gerald Brown. The MD knows his stuff. Kirkus Reviews. Suspenseful and realistic, Nashville Banner. If you get the novel, you'll see many other bits of praise like that in the opening section, the advanced praise section, the endorsement section. But here's one from our very own Stephen Meyer about Oppenheimer's Demon. Oppenheimer's Demon is a riveting disaster thriller in which both the origin and end of man hang in the balance. Bravo. And that's from, again, New York Times bestselling author Stephen Meyer. More informally, I had a friend who's a big thriller fan. He reads, he's got this whole shelf full of, you know, top best-selling thrillers. Very, very sharp guy. And I asked him if he would be interested in reading it just pro bono to see if he caught any last-minute proofreading errors. He caught four or five. But he said that he told me after he finished, he says, I don't know how good a job I was doing because the novel is such a page-turner. I sometimes would forget that my job was to proofread it. And we also, David Klinghoffer, who runs our Science and Culture Today, he praised the novel. He just finished it. So this is not just a book that's good for you, though I think there are some very important insights in the novel that we will talk about. But it is a page turner. It is a thriller in that tradition. Quick bit of additional background on Jeff before we dive in to talk about the novel. Jeffrey Simmons, MD, has authored seven novels, including The Z Papers, which sold 350,000 copies, and Pandemic, described by Publishers Weekly as a, quote, hard, lean thriller, too fast to disbelieve. He has been a community emergency response team trainer, served on FEMA's Regional Advisory Council, Regent 10, and is a former member of the Board of Governors of the American Academy of Disaster Medicine. His nonfiction titles include What Darwin Didn't Know, Billions of Missing Links, and Common Sense and Disaster Preparedness. Simmons is a fellow of Discovery Institute. So our audience is no doubt wondering, what kind of novel is Oppenheimer's Demon, and what's up with the eerie title? I'm glad you asked. Allow me to read the novel's back cover blurb, and then we'll get into our conversation. Hiroshima, Nagasaki, Chicago. Everyone knows about the two atomic bombs dropped on Japan in 1945, but Robert Oppenheimer's Manhattan Project had on hand another nuclear core. After claiming the lives of two scientists in separate accidents, it was dubbed the Demon Core and melted down. Some demons, however, are not so easily destroyed. And now Chicago DA Glenn Winders finds himself in a race against the clock to stop a shadowy nuclear terrorist and prevent World War III. His city is descending into panic, his teenage daughter is swept up in the chaos, and his only hope is a beautiful neurosurgeon whose controversial beliefs pose a challenge all their own. Okay, there's the blurb, and ID, the future listeners may have already guessed those controversial beliefs have something to do with intelligent design. So Jeff, you had success as a novelist, but you focused your writing energies on nonfiction in recent years. Tell us the origin story for this novel. How did you get back into fiction writing, and what role did Discovery Institute play in that process?
Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, I write nonfiction and fiction and humor without really planning to do so. It's kind of what gets my attention and what I'm interested in at the time, you know. And so I've been interested, as I've taught, disaster preparedness and a problem that I see the country having. I teach a response to a radioactive or a nuclear event. I've taught about 1,500 people. I've trained trainers as well. So I've trained about 1,500 citizens over a 20-year period on community emergency response stuff, and I can get back to that. And I trained about 100 trainers. And so I keep wondering about this nuclear part of the lesson, and I've since looked into it. But I have a quote here from President Obama, April 2010, when he told the 47 country nuclear security summit, two decades after the end of the Cold War, we face a cruel irony of history. The risk of nuclear confrontation between nations has gone down, but the risk of nuclear attack has gone up. And so it's kind of lingered in my head. I'm aware of it. And then I've done some other comments over the years, but by a variety of people. But this comes from the UN just 3 months ago, where they think the risk of a nuclear attack by terrorists has gone up. It's the highest ever. And it's in the UN News, May 2026. And so, yeah, we teach, you know, get in a basement or get in a bomb shelter if you can find one, or what to get behind, you know, wash off if you're, take your clothes off, bag them, wash off. Sometimes you run into using soap and warm water. I've always taught cold water because you don't want to absorb anything. And stay put for 24 or 40 hours. But nobody talks about the likely panic that's going to happen. And right. And so that's where my thought went, one thought. The other thing is, I've always been interested in intelligent design also. And so I just kind of wondered if I could meld these two together. And I think I found a way to do that. And so I was talking to Phil Skelch, who's a redeemed scientist, chemist, for years before he passed away, about this kind of thing. And then I presented to John West, who's the executive vice president, I think, for Discovery Institute. He liked the idea. And so I went ahead and started writing it. And so we worked on the concept for a while. And then, as you know, I worked with John, who's my editor. And the plan today is, if I can't remember what was in the book, he can correct me. And so it probably will.
We probably need each other. Yeah. Because
I'm an old, you know what, so I may forget something in the whole book. Who knows? But anyway, so it seemed like a really good topic to combine. It caught my interest. And that's really the bottom answer to what you asked. Does it catch my interest? I can't write something that doesn't really interest me. Try to force it out. I mean, the two comedy ones I wrote, called The Glue Factory and Return to the Glue Factory, and it was changed to Fun Things to Do on Uranus. And so, Fun and Good Things to Do on Uranus and something else, A Hitchhiker's Guide to Uranus. And so those things just, I laughed all the way through. They got my attention. The Z Papers was another one where President Nixon was somebody I disliked at the time. I thought, well, how could you kill him in a book, not in life? And I came up with an idea, and I wrote it out. And then I got an agent who became quite a big agent later years, who said, you know, maybe we shouldn't do president. You know, why don't we do something else? So I changed him to vice president. And so that sold well. It was bought for movies
twice. Might have sold $3.5 million instead of just $350,000 if you'd made him the president. And just saying.
Maybe. And it might have been locked up too.
Yeah, you might have been locked up. That money you wouldn't have been able to spend in prison. But I think you melded the disaster and the ID and the and just you're just beautifully. Yeah, it's a page turner. Another part of your biography that feeds into this novel, because the disaster stuff just rings true. I mean, you always know when you're reading something from somebody that knows what they're talking about, when you keep hitting things like, oh, I didn't know that, or you know, I wouldn't have thought to make that up, and then you go checking, oh, well, he didn't make it up. That's how they do things. So that worked great. Another part of it felt very authentic, and I've only visited Chicago. But most of the novel, not all of it, most of it is set in Chicago, and you have a background in Chicago. Tell us about that.
Well, I went to school there, so high school, and then I went to Navy Pier, which was a pier into Lake Michigan, the University of Illinois, which is now a much modern unit and near downtown. And then I went downstate to Champaign for 2 years. Then I went to medical school back in the city, University of Illinois. And so I've been around the area for 10 years. And then I went off to LA County Hospital for further training. And that's where some of the information comes from. And some comes from Illinois, Cook County, which really isn't called Cook County anymore, but it was a huge, crazy place.
Yeah, that hospital. Yeah, the hospital scenes. Yeah, just, you can tell that, okay, this guy, it was a doctor. He's worked in crazy emergency rooms. You get that comes through very strongly. And some of the politics of being a doctor, or some of that's drawn, I assume, from being a medical doctor, but also some of that's drawn from your watching some of the ID folks get beat up by Darwinists and their academic freedoms attacked. So that's another subplot. That's an important subplot novel.
I had no idea about that till I joined Discovery years ago. I mean, it got to be very interesting. The dilemma of trying to get an idea across that had some validity, has significant validity, and the problems people were having with their career choices and their jobs just because they felt different about Darwin. And so that's a very interesting controversy, a very important one. So I just put it in there. It's not the main purpose of the book. It's just in there for character development and for people to know the story of what's going on. There's so much more to say. But the driving force for the book is the timing. I think as a thriller writer, you have to have, just like an orchestra leader, you have to know the beat. You have to know the timing. And it's not something I can teach to somebody, I don't think, or explain. You either feel it works or you don't. So it's like you say, page turner. It's got to be something like a page turner for me also. And I just have to feel, you know, I feel when a beat's been dropped, it's been slowed down, you know, a monkey got in the way, whatever. But, you know, so as you know, we're working together, I would say to you, you know, it doesn't feel right to me. And sometimes that's all it is.
Just briefly, without any spoilers, what is this, the ID evolution subplot? Because you get the gist of it pretty early, so I don't think it's giving too much away to just kind of set up what happens there without telling readers how it plays out.
Yeah, well, the heroine in the story has a strong position on intelligent design, and her dean has a just contrary feeling about Darwin, and he feels his job, some of the donations, all kinds of business things can be affected by her, his mind, radical ideas about how we came about. And so she's trying to work on getting this problem solved, which I'll try to be vague about in the thriller. And he's kind of getting in the way because he's upset about what she's doing at other times. And to what he, you know, it's just not important to him what she's doing to save Chicago or the country. It's got to be, you're just wrong about what you think. And so, yeah, I just hoped I got it across. There were so many issues to cover And yet I didn't want it to take over the book. It wasn't the purpose of the book. There's a lot of things in there. The purpose of the book, probably bottom line, is I personally think we're not well prepared for a nuclear attack, be it terrorist, and much more needs to be done. And when I look at I looked at LA and New York and Chicago's emergency planning, the stuff that I can see as an outsider, and I see the same kind of stuff, you know, which I mentioned, get in a house, and, you know, get in a basement, get in a bomb shelter, have some supplies available, wash off. The same stuff I said before, it's all important. But what they don't look at is what's going to happen is panic around the country. Imagine one nuclear bomb going, or missile going off in one city. Imagine two. Then think about the 50 or 100 big cities in the country, especially ones that are near an Air Force base or an Army base or industrial park. Mm-hmm. And everybody's going to be in panic mode. And you see the word unfeasible when you read the government stuff about what to do about this. They don't know what to do about it. I mean, they have ideas about getting police out to control traffic, but the traffic is going to be devastating. It's like one of these soccer events where everybody just runs and smashes and runs over people and kills people.
Yeah, and then a good bit of the drama and tension is the panic unfolding and some of the near and dear to the reader's heart characters getting swept up in that and it creating problems as they try to track down the bad guys and that kind of thing. So it's very much showing that problem dramatically rather than just preaching it at the reader. But at the end, we do, after the novel's over, there's a 3-5 page kind of very boiled down disaster preparedness do's and don'ts. It's very helpful. It also points readers to some other resources. So we can just get more people thinking about
it.
It's going to be good.
I happen to know of a really good book on that. It's called Common Sense and Disaster Preparedness.
That's right, yeah.
It happens to be mine. And fortunately, just by luck, it's on Amazon.
Yes.
So you made
a good point, by the way, about that. When I first saw it, I was like, yeah, but everything's online now. So what do you really need a book like that? And then you made a good point. Well, if there's a disaster, you may not be able to get online.
Exactly.
And you may not have remembered everything from when you leased through it 3 years ago. And so I think it is a valuable book to have on your shelf.
I think the only thing that I would tell people to watch out for if anybody's going to buy it is the tourniquet section it's just a paragraph. I think it's page 11 is ancient. So what you need to do is look up how to use tourniquets because now we keep them on for extended periods of time. The old fashioned thing was we don't want to jeopardize the arm. And so it was a fight between letting people bleed and not letting them bleed, which in retrospect is crazy. Don't go with that and have to stick that as a caveat. The interesting, I also want to stick in, the Z Papers was a race against time. Vice presidential candidate was poisoned. His life is in jeopardy. He's going to die in 24 hours. We'll give you the antidote if you give us something for him. I won't say what that is in case somebody finds a book. So it's the same kind of thing. Where the people are racing to get an answer,
right?
What's going on? While the other bad guys are kind of building things up about and getting closer and closer to what they're going to do, and that's what I think makes it into a page turner.
Right. Yeah. The working title is something like T-38 hours or something, and we still do have kind of a countdown component if you organize the novel. But there's also some just really good characterization, which I was pleased by, very sharp. And some of the, not just the major characters, some of the minor characters are very sharply drawn. We'll talk more about some of those maybe later in a later episode. I don't think we've given a sense of the scope of the novel. I mean, you have the President of the United States as a character. You've got an FBI's special agent, you know, in charge of Chicago. You've got, of course, this becomes, when they're trying to stop nuclear terror, this becomes much bigger than just one Chicago DA and a neurosurgeon. And so there's a lot of other heroic individuals involved. There's a not so heroic political figure. I won't give too much away. That's a sharply drawn character. There's a homeless man. Maybe we'll talk about another episode. Just a big sprawling, energetic novel with some great insights. I'm looking forward to getting lots of, I'm just confident we're going to get lots of rave endorsements that we'll be able to add to the Amazon page. We're running out of time, but I want to have you back. Do you have any kind of final comments in this episode before we close out?
Only as I was also explaining what's going on behind the scenes. People don't really know what an emergency operations center is and how it's set up. So I thought I would give them a good look at that. You know, who's there and why they're there, and a little bit of how that conversation goes. And so that's, probably you ask 9 out of 10 people on the street in Chicago, I have no idea what they do, and they don't know where it is. In fact, I don't know where it is either, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't change anything.
Right. That was, I remember when I was first reading this, there's this thing called an EOC and cities have it. And there's a committee. Well, that makes sense, but it was all new to me. So there's a lot of fun details that are rooted in your knowledge of these sorts of things. So that's anybody that likes to geek out on some of the kind of technical thrillers, the novel by no means bogs down in that, but you just feel the authenticity of it as you're moving through the novel. It's good stuff. Okay, we're running out of time, Jeff, but I want to have you back on the show to dive deeper. I want us to talk a little bit more about how well are our cities prepared for something like a nuclear disaster of this sort? How well prepared are you, the individual listener, viewer prepared? We may also get into some of the other characters. This, like I said, this novel is just full of fun, interesting characters. I'm going to ask Jeff, we're coming up on the 25th anniversary of 9/11. Are we better prepared than we were 25 years ago? Worse? I assume some of the threats are different, with things like drone technology. So we'll speak to all those things. And I'll ask him point blank. I'm going to ask Jeff point blank, is this idea of somebody smuggling a tactical nuclear missile into the heart of America, is that just a fiction fantasy, or is that a real threat? So stay tuned for ID the Future. Again, this is Jonathan Witt. Thank you for watching and listening.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by its Center for Science and Culture.